Hello and welcome to our London History Podcast, where we share our love of London, its people, places and history. This podcast is designed for you to learn things about London that most Londoners don't even know, all in 20 minutes. I am your host, Hazel Baker, qualified London tour guide and CEO of londonguidedwalks.co.uk. Our walking tours are for those who love London and want to make the most of their time here, no matter whether it's for a weekend or a lifetime. We aim to deliver insightful and well-prepared London guided walks with genuine enthusiasm and professionalism. And in this podcast, we try and do exactly the same. If you enjoy what we do, then rate and review. You can become a patron for as little as £5. That's where we share additional videos or the interviews with you, plus lots of other unique content. You help us keep this podcast advert-free. Get that cup of tea, put your feet up, and enjoy. The clock tower of the Houses of Parliament is not only an icon for London, but for the UK. It's a symbol for democracy and evokes a sense of national pride. It is also one of the top five selfie spots in the world, along with London Bridge, Paris's Eiffel Tower, and Rome's Colosseum. To accompany this podcast, I've put together a colouring in sheet for our younger listeners and some key facts about Big Ben and the Elizabeth Tower. And you can download that and see more photos by visiting londonguidedwalks.co.uk/podcast and clicking on episode 59. There are two towers on the Palace of Westminster, also known as the Houses of Parliament. Today, we're going to be focusing on the Elizabeth Tower, which is right by Westminster Bridge. It's more affectionately known as Big Ben. The Elizabeth Tower is even marked as Big Ben on Google Maps. Dear oh dear, tut tut tut. But in fact, Big Ben is the nickname for the largest bell in the Elizabeth Tower. And that's the one you hear when the hour is struck. The four smaller bells are used to chime every quarter of an hour. The tower was originally called the Clock Tower. It was constructed in the 19th century and its contents represent the best of technology and design in Victorian Britain. However, in 2012, to mark Her Majesty's Diamond Jubilee, they renamed the tower as the Elizabeth Tower. And that includes a clock of unprecedented accuracy, which works as well today as it would have done 150 years ago when it was first built. It's the most accurate turret clock in the world. The Elizabeth Tower isn't the first clock tower at the Palace of Westminster. There's been one in situ for over 800 years. The first public clock at the Palace of Westminster was built between the years 1288 and 1292, and it's said to have been the first in the country to have hands, even though it's been suggested that it had a single hour hand. And where did the money come from for such a building project? Well, it came from a fine. Sir Ralph Dehane was the Chief Justice, 1235 to 1311, and it's believed that he angered King Edward I by altering a court record in order to reduce the amount of fine that had been imposed on a poor man. The Chief Justice was then fined, and it said that this fine was used to pay for the construction of a clock tower with a bell in the palace buildings where the law courts were housed. The bell became affectionately known as Great Tom of Westminster. During the Civil War, 1642 to 49, this medieval clock tower was used by the Royalists for refuge when they realised they were losing the battle in New Palace Yard. And when the Royalist soldiers ran out of ammunition, well, they took the stones from the tower and pieces of the clock mechanism and threw them down upon the attackers. But even when peace had been restored and the damage had been repaired, the clock was said to never quite work so well afterwards. For one reason or another, the clock fell into disrepair, and King William III in 1698 gave it to St Margaret's Church, which is on the other side of Parliament Square next to Westminster Abbey. By 1707, the tower itself had been demolished, and the large bell, Great Tom of Westminster, was sold to St Paul's Cathedral for a whopping £385, 17 shillings and sixpence, which is about £30,000 in today's money. On the way to St Paul's Cathedral, the bell was dropped and it cracked. It was recast in Whitechapel Foundry in 1716, and it still strikes the hours of St Paul's to this day. When Big Ben has been out of action, it's once again up to Great Tom to perform its original duty. On the night of the 16th of October 1834, most of the Palace of Westminster was destroyed by fire. The Great Westminster Hall was saved, but almost everything else had to be rebuilt. A competition was opened with the requirement that the proposed design for the new Houses of Parliament be either Gothic or Elizabethan in style. It was the celebrated architect Charles Barry who won the competition. He was born in Bridge Street, opposite the future site of the Clock Tower. Other works you might know of Barry include Highclere Castle, the stately home of the Grantham family in Downton Abbey, the Reform Club, a private members club on Pall Mall, and the interior of Lancaster House, used in the film The King's Speech and Netflix's The Crown. His style, however, was Italian architecture, his experience not really fitting in with the requirement of Elizabethan or Gothic style. His assistant was the 23-year-old Augustus Pugin. Pugin was another Londoner, having been born in Keppel Street in Bloomsbury. Now he was obsessed with all things Gothic. You may know Pugin's work. He created Alton Towers in Staffordshire. If you've been to Alton Towers Amusement Park, then you've been there. Or perhaps you know the famous twisted spire of the parish church in Chesterfield. Ultimately, it would be Pugin's design that would become reality and the Houses of Parliament that we know today. Original designs show that the clock tower hadn't been part of Barry's submission, but it was added on during the design process. And that meant a clock also needed to be made. It was astronomer George Airy who was appointed referee of the competition for the new clock. Industrialisation and advances in technology and communications had driven huge developments in timekeeping. Airy's specifications for the design of the clock were extremely demanding. It was to be the biggest and most accurate ever created. It was to push the limits of technology and become the best that British science could create. He required the accuracy should be within 1 second every hour. This was something that many clockmakers believed was absolutely impossible. And not only that, another requirement was an extraordinary feat of engineering was to cast and install the largest bell in Britain. An amateur horologist, Edmund Denison, designed the Great Clock, and the famous clockmaker, Edward Dent, constructed it. If you've seen the huge clock in St Pancras International Station above Paul Day's sculpture, The Meeting Place, then you have seen another example of Dent's work. Were they able to make this great clock accurate within 1 second? Yes, indeed they did. Weights, including pre-decimal pennies, sit on a shelf on the pendulum rod. Adding, moving these weights on the pendulum then regulates the clock. Dent died before completing the project, and it was subsequently finished by his son, Frederick Dent. The clock and bell were installed together in 1859. Overall, the pendulum is 4.4 metres long, that's 14.4 feet, and swings every 2 seconds. Denison invented the double three-legged gravity escapement, which is absolutely crucial to the clock's accuracy. So it's a fine balance. Adding an old penny will cause the clock to gain 0.25 seconds in 24 hours. Taking away one penny does the opposite. The clock mechanism itself weighs about 5 tons. Big Ben the Bell measures at a diameter of 2.7 metres. That's 8.85 feet. Its height, however, is only 2.2 metres. About 7.2 feet. That means that Big Ben the Bell is fatter than it is high. It weighs 13.7 tons, and the hammer used to strike the bell is 200 kilos. You might be surprised to know that Big Ben the Bell wasn't the first bell to be commissioned for this new tower. The first bell had been cast in 1856 at Stockton-on-Tees, and it was brought to London by the newfangled railway and also by sea. But during tests in New Palace Yard, a fatal crack appeared. The bell was broken up and a second bell was cast at the Whitechapel Bell Foundry. This was the bell that was brought to New Inn Yard by 16 white horses before being hauled up sideways up a 50-foot plus shaft into the new clock tower. Almost 16 years after the tower's first stone had been laid, the great Big Ben bell rang out across London for the very first time. Pugin, however, wasn't around to see the tower completed and died at home in Ramsgate, aged just 40 years old, 4 years before the project was completed. He wrote, "I never worked so hard in my life as for Mr. Barry, for tomorrow I render all the designs for finishing his bell tower, and it is beautiful, and I am the whole machinery of the clock." He also writes that Barry omitted to give him any credit for his huge contribution to the design of the new Houses of Parliament. In 1867, after the deaths of both Pugin and Barry, Pugin's son Edward published a pamphlet called "Who Was the Art Architect of the Houses of Parliament? A Statement of Facts." And it's in this which he asserts that his father was the true architect of the building, and not Barry. How did Big Ben get its name? Let the bell be called Victoria, after Queen Victoria, or St. Stephen, patron saint of the medieval palace of Westminster's chapel. It was, however, on the 22nd of October 1856, where the Times newspaper reports that our King of Bells will be named Big Ben, in honour of the Commissioner of Works, Sir Benjamin Hall. He was a tall man, over 6 feet tall, and had the affectionate nickname Big Ben. It's believed that the bell has also been inscribed with his name. However, I haven't seen any examples of that. I've heard stories that Big Ben came from the heavyweight boxing champion Benjamin Cornt, whose nickname was also Big Ben and was given to other large objects, but we just don't have any proof. The total of 5 bells create the Westminster chimes. Big Ben is the note E, and then the full quarter bells, G sharp, F sharp, A and B. The chimes are set to the following verse. "All through this hour, Lord, be my guide, and by thy power no foot shall slide." And if you were a brownie like me, then you might know these words instead. "O Lord our God, thy children call, grant us thy peace and bless us all." And that was something that we sang at the end of every meeting. Oh, and for those who are interested, I was a gnome. The tower and the bells may be a defining icon of London and the UK now, but they haven't always been popular. Sir John Pakington, MP, had wanted that horrible tolling to stop. And another MP, Thomas Hankey, had asked whether there was any chance of the bell sounding more like ordinary bells. At present, it inflicted great annoyance upon the public and the house. Not surprising, really, as the bells could be heard for up to 5 miles away. And after the great Big Ben cracked, the Earl of Derby had commented that he, in common with all the inhabitants of that part of London in which he lived, rejoiced. The clock tower, however, became increasingly popular with the public, and in the late 19th century, it opened up for tours on Saturday afternoons. Remember Edward Dent, the man who made the clock? Well, his company, at the turn of the 20th century, published postcards featuring Big Ben, which made the tower even more famous. Big Ben featured in the service held to commemorate the end of the First World War and Armistice Day, and its fame spread further on New Year's 1923, when the BBC first broadcast Big Ben striking the hour to welcome in the new year. It marked the start of what is now a familiar sound in homes across the country. It wasn't until another 9 years when Big Ben was heard globally, when the BBC Empire Service, which predates the BBC World Service, first broadcast its chimes. Big Ben continued to ring all through the Second World War. If you look at the clock tower now, you'll see that it's covered in scaffolding. Essential maintenance is being carried with the aim to repair and conserve the tower. Upgrade facilities is necessary and to ensure its integrity for future generations. There have been some surprising finds during the refurbishment, including finding a time capsule. It said on the capsule, deposited 16th June 1956 by A.W. Haltersby Esquire, resident engineer 1927 to 1956. And it's within this time capsule, along with adverts and newspaper cuttings, there was evidence of an even earlier time capsule from 1903. How marvellous! When I had work done on my bathroom, I must admit I have left a time capsule for someone in the future to find. If you were creating a time capsule, what would you leave inside? Another surprising find was some work done at Lincoln University, and this shows that the original Barry and Pugin design on the clock hands and the numbers we know as black, but they were originally a vibrant Prussian blue. And they've worked out that it was blue all the way up to the 1930s. And if you look up at the clock face in the tower now, you will see this magnificent blue. And I've included some photos in the show notes for you there. Repair work had been done on the tower in the 1950s. The final costs were £66,000, £29,000 more than originally budgeted. Today's refurbishment was originally expected to be finished this year, 2021, but was held back due to the pandemic and is now due for completion in early 2022. So far, the costs of the project have already spiralled to at least £80 million, surpassing the original budget of £29 million. It just goes to show you that some things never change. Let's hope, with all the amazing work that they've been doing, it ensures that the Elizabeth Tower and its unique set of bells remain a symbol for the British people for another 160 years. I hope you've enjoyed this week's episode. If you'd like to know more about Westminster and Whitehall, then book yourself onto our Wonders of Whitehall walking tour, either a guided walk or book a private tour. We cover the major landmarks of Whitehall, including the Houses of Parliament, Westminster Abbey, and many blockbuster film locations. But on top of that, you can uncover the lesser known history of Whitehall, including a Tudor palace, notorious monarchs, and world class architecture. You can book our tours online at londonguidedwalks.co.uk. It'll be great to see you.